you don't know what she's talking about, then it's time for Faith Finds Out. Ooh, you don't know, but you're gonna find out.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Faith Finds Out. This is your host, Faith Signs. I have my little girl, Bea, my little five-year-old Pomeranian, potentially corgi mix. I still don't know. Anyway, I have her in this little tiny closet with me because every time I don't bring her into the closet to record with me, she has a meltdown and, goes potty all over my apartment. Just to spite me, frankly. She's got some separation anxiety that we're working through. So anyway, I hope she doesn't make any noise, but I guess I kind of wanted to warn you just in case she plans to. I hope you guys are having a great week. It's been a good week over here for me. I wanted to take just a second at the top of this episode and say thank you so much to everyone who was so awesome and encouraging in response to last week's episode. Obviously, we talked about autism spectrum disorder, and I shared my own personal experience of being on the spectrum, and, you know, you never know how people are going to respond to that kind of thing. Obviously, it's not something that I'm ashamed of or anything like that, and it honestly isn't even something that I think about all that much. It's just kind of a part of who I am. But still, when you share something that has connotations, I guess, has like, you know, there's some really stupid, I don't know. Anyway, people have stupid opinions that are ignorant, and you're always a little nervous putting something like that out into the world. But as always, you guys are awesome, and, you know, I got nothing but encouraging comments and messages and things like that. So I just wanted to say thanks. I think that's pretty cool. And then also, before we move on to this week, I wanted to say I do recognize, I had a couple people very kindly point this out, and I do absolutely recognize that, you know, there is a lot about autism spectrum disorder that I didn't cover. You know, my intention in sort of constructing last week's lesson was really showing what it was like to be a high-functioning, which is not a term that we like, by the way, but it is a medical term, so I'm going to use it so you understand, a high-functioning person on the spectrum as an adult, right? I just, whenever you look online about ASD, it really does focus so much in on children with autism spectrum disorder. And, you know, I get that because it is often diagnosed as a child and, you know, as a parent raising, you know, just a neurotypical child, that's enough of a challenge. But when you add that component, I know it is really tricky. And so it makes sense that, you know, a large amount of the information that you can find on ASD is all geared towards children, but I really specifically wanted to fill what I think is another need, which is just teaching people how to connect with other fellow adults who might be on the spectrum. And so that's what I really wanted to zero in on and focus in on. I also, you know, not only did I not talk about children really all that much, but I also did not focus much on nonverbal people on the spectrum and other things like that. And those are all things that are really important and that I would love to get into, but, you know, it was just one episode. So I just wanted to say I'm aware that I left big pieces of what it's like to be on the spectrum out of my lesson plan, I guess, so to speak, for last week. And I absolutely intend to circle back on this. You know, we'll do another ASD episode sometime, you know, down the road and circle back and dive a little deeper into the other aspects that I didn't really cover. So wanted to go ahead and say that. Thank you for pointing that out to me. And then also, just again, thank you so much for the great response. I always start off every episode thanking people, but I can't help it. You guys are great. It's so fun to see such encouraging responses and you know, people are continuing to listen and just, it's so nice. It's just so lovely. So now that that is out of the way, you know, I don't have like a really interesting week to share with you. My car is still broken because I have not given any focus or attention to it. And so I've been just at the house and honestly, like, thriving. I really have really enjoyed not really necessarily leaving my apartment much. I did go and see one of my best friends, Lizzie, this weekend. I just went over to her house and I helped her, like, pack for a trip she's going on. Very safe trip. very, very safe trip. And so that was really fun. She's like one of the only people that I've seen since I've been in quarantine. Since I broke up with the guy I was seeing going into quarantine, she's really pretty much been like the only person I've seen a lot. And I've seen my sisters, but we've socially distanced for the most part. And so, you know, it's nice to see another human, to be around another human and pet someone else's dogs for a change. So that was really lovely. You guys, listen, the tricky part about the theme and layout, I guess layout is a terrible way, the format, there we go, format of this podcast is that it doesn't leave a whole lot of room for me to just like chat and talk to you guys, which is fine, obviously. I'm more excited about the learning aspect of it, obviously, but it is fun to be able to share stuff. So I'm thinking about like how I want to do that in the future, but the reason I just thought of that is because I was going to tell you, she's like my best friend, honestly, Lizzie, and she is someone I met actually through my ex, which is a fun story. She actually dated him before I did, and he was the worst to her, and then he dated another girl who he was the worst to, and then he dated little old me. He's the worst. It doesn't matter. The guy's a child, right? But it's so nice the way life turns out, because like I was madly in love with this guy for like a solid year, and we finally kind of got together in the last like 2 months, and then, you know, in like the end of April, I don't know. 2020 has been really good for me because I feel like weeding out a lot of stuff that just isn't benefiting me, and he was someone who just wasn't benefiting me. Like, I'm a 30-year-old woman and I know how I should be treated, right? Like, just basic common respect, and that wasn't obviously happening in that relationship. So I bailed hard, and I'm really proud of myself for doing that, because I can get really attached and it's hard for me to cut and run even when I know it's best. But I did, like, in an instant, and I did not look back. I literally, like, I had like shirts of his that I would sleep in and stuff like that, blah blah blah. I literally did a load of laundry that night. I like brought all of his shirts and everything I had of his to his place. I dropped it off at his front door, and I was like, we're never speaking again. And we haven't. But I did reach out to his ex, because when he and I first were friends, he was with her, and there was a lot about our friendship. Like, we never crossed any like boundaries of like, we were never alone together in one of our apartments. We never were physical in any way, shape, or form. Like, I think two awkward sight hugs is like the entirety of our physical touch or whatever since while they were dating. But we definitely had like a very strong emotional connection right from the start, and he really did. Like, he confided in me instead of her. Like, he treated her in a really crappy way. Because I cared about him, I just tried not to see it or pretended like I wasn't at fault in any of it and it wasn't my business. And I just let him treat this girl like absolute crap. And then they ended. And so anyway, blah, blah, blah. After that was over between he and I just reached out to her on Instagram and I was like, hey, I just want to say sorry. I realized this was so messed up and, you know, just blah, 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 right? And she was so sweet. She responded and she's like, hey, let's hop on the phone. And she was like super forgiving and understanding. And she was like, it's not a big deal. That guy's the worst. Like, don't even worry about it. And we literally became such fast friends. Like, this was just a few months ago and she's like my best friend probably. And it's just really, it's so funny how life works, right? Because I can't even, I'm not even mad about the time I would argue wasted of my life, because through him, I met someone so wonderful and that means so much to me. So life is funny. That's all I guess I wanted to say. Life is quite funny, and remove all the douchebags from your life, because girlfriend, they don't deserve you, or boyfriend, they don't deserve you, or whoever you are, whoever they are, doesn't deserve you. If they're treating you like crap, if they're ignoring your feelings, if they're talking down to you when you try to express yourself, if they're making you feel stupid and insignificant and unimportant, cut that person right out of your life. So anyway, I know you guys don't tune in to hear about personal stories, but I also know that that's a juicy AF personal story, and I know that at least someone out there really appreciated me sharing it. And Lizzie, I love you, and thanks, bro. thanks for introducing me to my best friend. Really appreciate ya. Don't ever want to talk to you again, but really, really, really grateful for that. And we're moving right along. So for today's fun fact, you guys, it is so, as I'm sure you guessed, fun. It was like one that as soon as I read it, I stopped on it and I'm like, this is it. Like, we're sharing this next. I have a little bank now of fun facts that I've been working on in, you know, spare time and such. And, you know, I'm a working girl. I'm a businesswoman. I'm planning all day for this podcast, you guys. It's in the back of my mind at all times. So I have a little bank now of fun facts, and this is the one I was most excited to share the soonest. So it is that Scotland has 421 words all meaning some form of snow. 421 words that all mean snow. I think that's crazy. So they have just a couple examples. I'm not going to try to list too many of them because they're very hard to pronounce and I have absolutely no idea what they're supposed to sound like. I'm going to do my best. But there is one, it's, I guess, Sneasel? S-N-E-E-S-L. It means to start raining and snowing. And then Fifle, which is like to swirl. And then Flinkendrinken, I'm not making this up, guys, Flinkendrinken is a light snow, and so on and so forth. 421 unique words for snow. Like, that's so crazy. I can't get over that. I think that's so awesome. So there are obviously like many, many more words, but I'll let you guys Google them. It's really exciting. I found this fact actually on BBC News. So if you want to go to bbc.com, you'll probably be able to search and find it. I love BBC, you guys. They're such a great resource when you're trying to research something. And also just for news, I'm a big fan. I really like BBC. I think for me, I really like when they report on American politics because I feel more, and I know that this is never ultimately like all true 100%, but I feel like it is a little more impartial given that they're, you know, removed from, you know, they're like actually being based in the US. I feel, I don't know, maybe that's all in my head and they're just as biased as other media. Who knows? Honestly, that's not what this podcast is about. Please don't talk to me about politics. I will annoy you and you won't want to be my friend anymore because I'm very passionate. So anyway, BBC's great. Definitely check it out. And yeah, go look up the rest of those words. It's so weird and random. So that's our fun fact. I hope you had fun with it. I'm going to take a quick break and then we'll hop right into our lesson. So guys, I'm so excited about this week's topic. I know you can see from the title, we're talking about the Enneagram. I love the Enneagram personality typing. It's something that, well, I mean, first of all, as somebody on the spectrum, I love any, like, science you can try to boil people down to in terms of their actions and emotions and thoughts and personality. I love being able to type people. I know that's not great, and I have learned to use that very loosely, but it's really, really fun, and I know this is confusing to anyone that's never heard of the Enneagram. We'll talk about it after the break, but it's going to be really fun. I'm not getting into everything on this episode. We're definitely going to do future episodes and get more into it because it can get very granular. It gets very specific and there's a lot we're not going to dig into, but you will learn the origins of the Enneagram. You'll learn what the profile typing actually is and what it means. We'll talk about all the basics like wings and different things like that. I'll talk a little bit about how you best find your own personality, your own Enneagram type, and then we'll get into each one of the 9 types and we'll talk all about them. And my hope in doing that is that there is one specific number that really, really stands out to you and really resonates with you and perhaps even makes you a little uncomfortable or embarrassed because you see yourself in it in both a positive and negative way. And that's how you'll know, like, hey, I think I'm a 1, I think I'm a 7, like whatever. I'm hoping that I can give you some guidance, and I really do feel like that's the best way to learn it. There's so many quizzes you can take, and I've actually, as I've gone back and circled back and studied more in preparation for this episode, I have really changed my mind about those quizzes. I don't think that's a good, accurate portrayal. I really don't. I think, honestly, just learning about each type and then just, you know, really searching yourself for which one resonates most with you. I believe for the most part it'll be kind of obvious after we really dig into them. So I'm really excited to do that. And we'll talk about, obviously, the importance of it and how it can be a tool for you in your life and in how you see yourself and speak to yourself, because that's very important, so my therapist says, and also how you interact with other people. It'll help you connect with other people better. So I'm really, really excited to talk about the Enneagram. I know that every bit of that was absolute gibberish to people who don't yet know what the Enneagram is. We're gonna get into it after the break. I can't wait. I don't want to stall anymore, so I'm gonna take a quick break and then we're gonna hop right into it. All right, guys, so we are back and ready to talk about the Enneagram. For me, that was so weird the way I said that. I'm going to leave that in. I'm not going to redo that because I like trolling myself. I'm excited to talk about the Enneagram, you guys. I want to just start off just by saying, this is going to kind of sound random, but I'm going to tie it back. I have made a list when I was really officially decided I'm doing this podcast. I sat down and made a gigantic list that I have since been adding to obsessively of all the topics I want to eventually cover. And they all kind of fall into various categories, not by subject, although that is true, but also really what I mean is different categories of like why I'm interested in learning and teaching them. Like, you know, for example, MKUltra, episodes 1 and 2, that was simply just something I was curious about. Like, that was just something that just plain sounded like it'd be fun to learn about. And then, you know, circling back to autism spectrum disorder, and that was something that I wanted to teach because I feel like it is continually a challenge for people to communicate in general, and even more so for anyone who's different, really, right? Like, think about people who are deaf and people who are blind and how different media has to be for them, right? Just, it's so hard to communicate with different kinds of people in this world. So anytime I can add to that conversation in a beneficial way and really help people to grow into a deeper understanding of how to communicate with people, that's just a kind of niche that I'm pretty passionate about. And I do believe that the Enneagram falls into that. And then there are things that we're going to learn because I genuinely feel like we should have learned them. And I don't know about you, but I definitely didn't. So, like, we are going to get deep into personal finances, and we're going to learn about the stock market, and we're going to learn about all of those kinds of things that are going to sound boring to you, but I want you to hang in with me because we need to know these things. This is the stuff we need to know, and we are, I believe, routinely in our lives getting taken for a ride. Like, we are getting manipulated in this world, in this society, because of our ignorance about these specific things. And I want you to have, like, I want you to have everything you want. I want you to have total and complete financial freedom. And you got to know all these things in order to know that. So, you know, again, I think I touched on this in a past episode, but it sucks we didn't learn that in school. I think we should have, or at least in our childhood. And so I'm circling back. I'm filling in all of those little gaps in knowledge that we really should have learned. And that is another sort of reason why I have picked certain topics. So they all kind of fall into different, I guess, motives, categories of different motives for me. And yeah, so with the Enneagram, I genuinely believe in this as a tool for communicating with people who are different than you, and also learning more about yourself and how you best receive communication and the things that you tend to go to in times of stress, like thinking certain thoughts on repeat and stuff like that. It's all tied back, I believe, to your Enneagram personality type, or it can be, right? This is just a tool, but I think it's a really useful one, and I think it can help you to get to know yourself and the people around you better. So I'm all for that, and I'm really excited to talk about it. People have a lot of different opinions about the Enneagram. I don't care about any of them. I'm just going to teach it to you. So, the Enneagram is a model of the human psyche, which is principally understood and taught as a typology of 9 interconnected personality types. So there's a lot of shaky origin, like, it's all theories about where it originated, right? There are some strong theories which we'll touch on, but nobody really knows the true origin of the Enneagram. You know, people argue different various origins for very seemingly realistic reasons, or logical reasons, I should say, and so it's just one of those things, right? Like, everybody has their own opinions, and I don't know that we'll ever know exactly what's what, but there are some interesting theories about the origin of the Enneagram. So before we get any further into talking about what the Enneagram is, I want to talk about its origins and its history. So I should let you know up top, I'm really never going to be able to confidently pronounce names that are foreign to me, and I am really sorry about that. I'm going to do my best. I'm very, very open to people correcting me. I hate that because, you know, I'm a recruiter, like I said, and I have to talk to a lot of different people on the phone and from all over the world because I work for a global tech company. So I talk to people, you know, from all over the place and different cultural backgrounds and everything like that, and I strive so hard to pronounce everyone's name correctly because it makes me feel respected when someone is like, hello, Faith Signs, and they don't say, like, Sayens or Sains or Sanchez, which I've gotten a lot, and that's honestly straight up racist, but anyway, I really appreciate that, right? We talked about this last week. Somebody's name is their favorite word, right? So I really want to do my best in all of our future episodes where I mention any human beings. I really want to pronounce the names correctly, but I'm giving you a heads up that I'm going to be miserable at it because it is not a skill I possess. So anyway, the word Enneagram comes from the Greek root Ennea, which means nine, and gram, which means drawn, written, modeled, so on and so forth. So the root of the Enneagram, like I said, is very much disputed, but, you know, there are different connections to various spiritual and oral traditions. So I say that to say it does very much appear, and this is something people agree on, that for as long as we were recording things, writing things down in one way or another, for as long as that has been happening and we've been sharing our traditions and cultures and everything like that, there has been the Enneagram. It's been a presence. And so people have trouble rooting it back to something. There are some authors that claim that there's strong Sufi roots. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Actually, guys, I didn't do my homework well on this because I have a note here that says Google Sufi because I want to know what it is so I'm not talking out of my ass. And I did not do that. So we're going to do it together. This is going to happen from time to time. And I'm not going to cut it out either because I do think it's fun to kind of go through the process of searching something out for, like, live with you guys. I think it's just kind of fun. Let's look. Okay, so I'm on Wikipedia, which, you know, like we'd said before, not a good place for details, but a great place to get an original understanding. And that's all I'm looking for right now. Wikipedia says Sufism, defined as Islamic mysticism. Okay. The phenomenon of mysticism within Islam, characterized by values, rituals, practices, doctrines, and institutions which began very early in Islamic history and represents the main manifestation of most important and central crystallization of mystical practice in Islam. So that's Sufism. And I hope you guys comment and let me know if that's something that's fun, you guys just kind of Googling stuff live with me. I had this idea at the beginning that I was going to do that in every episode, and then I was like, that's a lot. Like, settle in, Faith. Like, just don't get too excited, little kid. So let's circle back to our research here. So some authors claim that it has strong Sufi roots, which we now know as Islamic mysticism, while others point to connections to early Christianity. It should be noted, though, it's definitely not common to all Sufi traditions. Like, anyone who sort of associates themselves with Sufi traditions, not everybody is tuned into the Enneagram, utilizing the Enneagram. You know, it calls that out to say, like, it's not a main focal point of the religion, right? But again, some people believe it has connections to early Christianity, and there's a lot of other potential origins. I wanted to say really quickly, there are some Christians in recent years after this was kind of repopularized, because the Enneagram sort of came back around and was popular within the last few years, I would say maybe 4 or 5 years. And before that, it had kind of faded into the background for a while, at least from my point of view. And now we're seeing this thing where a lot of Christians are like disowning it or renouncing it, I guess. They feel like because it has potential, I don't know, quote-unquote pagan roots, that it's, like, really bad. And, you know, do you, right? Like, I don't want to disrespect your beliefs, but I will share my opinion on that because, you know, well, it's my show and I can do whatever I want and I have opinions about it. So I just think, as someone who, again, I'm really not a very religious person. I am a spiritual person and I did go to seminary school. So I did study the Bible for a few years and I have read it through several times. And in my opinion, there's just example after example after example of God teaching us very specifically that he really only cares about your heart, and that the actions and the words that sometimes come up are secondary to where your heart is positioned and the health or unhealth of your heart and your desire to either honor the Lord or honor other things. And your heart on the whole is going to be the overflow of your words and actions, right? Or your words and actions will be the overflow of that. And sometimes they won't be. And you'll yell at somebody that you love and you'll be super lazy one day and not get anything done. And then you'll, whatever, I don't know, whatever. You mess up because you're a human, but on the whole, the heart matters. The condition of your heart matters. And so I just have a hard time believing that God is going to, like, strike you with lightning or whatever because you like the Enneagram. Even though you're obviously, even though there potentially are pagan origins, like, that doesn't really mean anything if your intention in using it is just to know and understand yourself and other people better. Like, calm down. That's all I have to say about it. Like, I just think everyone needs to calm down. Like, T-Swift was right last year. Everyone just calm down. Like, literally, you need to calm down. I really mean that. So, anyway, the 21st century Enneagram, like I said, how it was repopularized. More recently, the evolution of Enneagram in the form and shape that is known in the 21st century is much clearer. There was a man, and again, I'm going to say this name so terribly, Gurdjieff. I want to say Gurdjieff, G-U-R-D-J-I-E-F-F, Gurdjieff, a Russian mystic and teacher, used the Enneagram to explain the unfolding of creation, calling it a symbol of perpetual motion. Movements or sacred dances constitute an integral part of Gurdjieff's work. So he was really passionate about teaching through dancing, which is very peculiar, but okay. He alludes to the fact that he was introduced to the Enneagram in the 1920s during a visit to a monastery in Afghanistan, but he does not definitively explain any of, like, the origins beyond that. In South America, there was a man named Oscar Ichazo. So he established in 1968 the Arika School, and he taught the Enneagram there as a part of their course. During the 1960s, Ichazo's Enneagram of Personality and related theories formed part of a larger body of teaching that he termed protanalysis, I want to say, protanalysis. So then there was a man, Claudio Naranjo, N-A-R-A-N-J-O. He was a Chilean psychiatrist who was exposed to the Enneagram through Ichazo, and he brought the Enneagram into modern psychology tradition. So he and Ichazo were really the main driving forces and really bringing this about in the 21st century and popularizing it within psychology. It has been partly validated through experiential and empirical studies. So, you know, in, I think around 2012, there was a study conducted and it was partially validated the concept of the Enneagram. So I think that's something to you know, be said for. There are a lot of different types of personality typing, and I love a little bit about all of them, but I feel that the Enneagram is the one that is the most kind of all-encompassing, and it keeps it general enough that I really believe it's just a framework, which is all it's supposed to be. I just really like that. Guys, I'm gonna be honest here because I think it's good to be honest. I just hit stop after I told you about the origins. I was gonna get into talking. I did. I got into talking all about the Enneagram and what it is, and I went through every personality type and I talked forever, and I wrapped it up and I was all adorable and delightful and I said thanks and I'll see you next week, and I went to hit stop and realized I wasn't recording. So this is the second time I'm going to go through all of this. I am deeply upset with myself. Not your fault. I'm laughing so I don't cry. So, I'm very well rehearsed now. This is all gonna be really great. Good for you guys getting the best of me, because I had a practice round. Alright. I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I have absolutely no idea where I started and stopped before, so I might be repeating myself, and when I edit, I'll be mad at myself and I'll remove a lot of stuff. Honestly, this day is shot. This whole recording day, I'm mad. But the Enneagram, the Enneagram is a personality profile. It's a typing system. And, you know, we talked about the origins. I want you guys to understand psychologically, it's just a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool. And everyone that fits into the different personalities, you're never going to fully relate to every single aspect on paper with the personality type you fall into. You're always going to, you know, closely relate with some qualities, and then some of them you're going to be like, no, I don't really do that. I'm not really like that. And that's totally normal. So take all of this with that sort of small grain of salt, that all this is one of many tools you can have in your tool belt, so to speak, when it comes to communicating better with other people. It doesn't need to be taken any more seriously than that. And it's also not an excuse, okay? Like, it's not an excuse for doing a crappy thing and then being like, can't help it. I'm just a four. We be like that. Like, that's not what this is. And it's also not a way to beat yourself up or to be overconfident in certain aspects of yourself. It's just a way to understand your needs, your challenges, your kind of root fears, and all of those things in unique ways. So I want us to all understand that, and don't take this too seriously. You know, that said, it has deeply, deeply helped me and other people I know to understand myself and others more deeply. So, you know, with all of that said, there are a couple terms I want to define before we get into talking about the specific types. And I'll say this again, there's a lot we're not going to get into today. If I haven't said that, like, again, who knows? I literally just talked for 2 hours and nothing was recording. So if I keep saying as I said, and I've never said this before, honestly, just deal with it. We're not going to get into everything because it can get really granular when people start talking about different nuances and aspects of this. We're going to keep it limited to, you know, your specific personality type. And then there is something called wings, which is, we'll talk about what wings are. And then we're going to talk about integration and disintegration. And with those three key terms being defined, we'll hop into talking about the specific profiles. So wings are like this. Most, but not all, Enneagram personality theorists teach that a person's basic type is modifiable, right? So, like, you can be mainly a 2, but relate to the numbers on either side of you. So I am a 2 through and through, but I definitely have some traits of a 1, and they're also pretty prominent. You would be a 2 with a wing 1. So the wing is very easy to understand, except, you know, it is just on either side of you. So there's no way that you're going to be like a 1 with a wing 5. It doesn't work that way. The wings are really just on either side of you. And they're numbers that you definitely relate to, but aren't necessarily like your main number. So, you know, not everybody has a wing. I'm a pretty straightforward 5, like through and through. If anything, I lean to the 4 a little bit. I used to think I was a 5-wing 6 because I took a stupid quiz that told me that. But as I kind of move forward in my life, I realized that I don't really relate to a 6 in the way that I do with 4s. There is some weird part of me that is a 4. And it's funny that I said weird, because when I describe a 4, that will be funny to you down the road, I promise. But anyway, wings are just other types that you can relate with. And so when we're talking about integration and disintegration, I like to generalize that, which maybe is wrong, but I like to generalize that as healthy and unhealthy. So when you are the healthiest, most, you know, self-reflective, encouraging part of, or I guess, version of yourself, then you are integrated and you can kind of take on characteristics of another type, because maybe that other type has strengths where your type has challenges. So to use an example as a 5, when I am very healthy, I can act like an 8. That is my integration number. And 8s are a lot more confident and they take more action. They're more decisive. And 5s are not good at those things a lot of the time and really do need that. So when I'm a healthy version of myself, I can take on those characteristics, which are characteristics I deeply need. So that is my integration number. My disintegration number is what I tend to be when I am my most stressed, I guess, you know, again, to overgeneralize, unhealthy version of myself. So when I'm really going through it, I'm really up in my feelings and I'm really like, you know, basically everyone in 2020, for the record, is going to be kind of, will at least be able to see parts of that in themselves, I would assume. And again, I'm not trying to be, I don't want to overgeneralize too much, but I am trying to again, just kind of make it easier to understand. So when you are kind of feeling not the healthiest version of yourself mentally and emotionally, you're in a lot of distress, you tend to take on some maybe of the not so positive parts of a different number. So in disintegration, my disintegration number as a 5 would be a 7. And that can kind of be for a 5, a deeper level of escapism. 7s are very good at distracting themselves from things they don't want to think about. And you know, leaning into that can be not such a healthy thing for a 5, actually. So, you know, that, again, that's a very surface level example. And we'll get into talking about each type and you'll come to understand that a lot more. But as we're going through and talking about each different personality type, I am going to say, you know, these are the potential wings. This is who they are in disintegration, and this is who they are in integration. I'm also going to post the Enneagram symbol on my Instagram. Again, I have a post that goes along with every episode, so I will post the picture of the Enneagram symbol. It would be stupid to try and explain it to you over a podcast. It's something that is very visual, but it's like a circle and it's numbered 1 through 9 all the way around it. So all the different types, and there are lines drawn to, like, from each type to their disintegration number and their integration number. So again, make sure that you follow me on Instagram at Faith Finds Out Podcast, and you'll see the symbol and some other effects and, you know, charts and all of that good stuff. So with those three things defined, let's just get into talking about the types. I feel like the best way to A, learn about the Enneagram, and B, figure out who you are and kind of where you fall on the Enneagram, not who you are, but where you fall and what your personality type, you know, likely would be, is to just learn about them. And you're going to find one that you really relate to. And I think I said that earlier, that you really, you know, majorly relate to, and you'll kind of start to know, like, hey, I really think I'm a, you know, 4. I really think I'm a 1, like, whatever. And I used to be really supportive of the different quizzes and stuff that are online, but I don't feel like they're accurate. And I think ultimately the best thing to do is just learn about the types and figure out what you feel in your heart you relate to. Because honestly, you know yourself better than any quiz or me or anyone else. You know yourself the best. So I can't answer any of that for you. And I don't believe a quiz can either. But I think as we kind of just go through them, you're going to start to wrap your mind around what I'm talking about. It's all probably pretty confusing right now for someone who's never heard of the Enneagram and doesn't get into personality profiles. I love them. So I think we're going to start with the 1 and go all the way through the 9. I know that sounds really obvious, but it's actually not, because one more thing I want to say before we hop in, I'm glad I reminded myself of this, is there are 3 major categories that the 9 types fall into. So there is the thinking center, which is 5, 6, and 7, which means that numbers that fall into the center, me, we think first and most presently, and then we start to recognize that we're feeling things and we're kind of having gut feelings about things and we're being intuitive and all of those things, but it's really secondary to our thoughts. And then there is the instinctive center, which is numbers 8 9 and 1. And again, they tend to be really driven by their instincts, right? By their intuition, by their gut, in very different ways. And then there is, you know, finally the feelings center, which is numbers 2, 3, and 4. They feel first, they think next, and that's just kind of how they operate. And then so each center, each of the three centers has its own common challenge or issue, so to speak. For the thinking center, for example, that would be fear. Something that really drives this 5, 6, and 7 is kind of this underlying fear. And then for the instinctive center, it would be anger or rage. And then for the feeling center, it would be shame. So I say that to say, it doesn't necessarily always make the most sense to start at 1 and go all the way from 1 to 9, because that would be starting at the end of one center and then going into another center and then circling back to that center. And so, you know, it sometimes can make sense to break them up by category, but for sake of simplicity, I think I'm just going to number them 1 through 9 so that you can best remember what we're talking about, and I'll try to say them quite a lot. So with that said, let's hop right into talking about 1. So the 1 is known as the reformer. They are rational, idealistic, they are principled, purposeful, very self-controlled. They tend to be perfectionists, right? So, you know, they their basic fear is of being bad, corrupt, or evil, maybe even defective. And their basic drive and desire is to be good and to have integrity and to be balanced. So they have a very, very strong sense of right and wrong. They are deeply ethical, moral individuals, whatever their morals are, right? Whatever they have come to believe is right or wrong, they believe it passionately, and it is their driving force in life to do what they feel is good and to never do what they feel is bad. There is right and wrong. It's very black and white, and they want to stay, you know, doing right. They're teachers, crusaders, advocates for change. They're always striving to improve the people and the things, the environment around them, and always working to improve themselves. They want to be perfect, so they never make a mistake. They are well-organized, orderly, fastidious. They try to maintain high standards, but they can slip into being overly critical and be perfectionists. And they can be critical, again, of themselves very often, but also of people around them. So, you know, when someone who is in the life of a 1, someone who's loved by a 1, a sister, a husband, whatever, does something wrong or makes a decision they don't feel is the right one for them, they can tend to get really judgmental and really overly vocal about, like, no, you can't do that, you have to do this, because they just so passionately believe they know what is best for that person. You know, again, their key motivations are to be right. They strive higher, they improve everything constantly, they want to be consistent with their ideals, they want to constantly justify themselves, they want to be beyond criticism. They never want to be criticized by other people, so, you know, they criticize themselves. They're over the top in self-condemning because they never want to be put in a situation where they're being condemned by somebody else, right? So they tend to dwell on their mistakes. That's a common challenge for a 1. They really dwell on, you know, they're the kind, there's a meme about 1s that's like this guy looking out the window all sad, and it's like raining out the car window, you know, it's like super in his feelings. And it says like a 1 thinking about a grammatical mistake in an email they sent to their boss 3 months ago. And it's like, it obviously that's, you know, like an over the top kind of caricaturized idea, but it's true of 1s. Like, it's hard for them to let go of what they perceive as a failure of theirs. They never want to fail. They only want to do what is right and to be the best version of themselves that they could ever possibly be. So, you know, again, so quote unquote unhealthy, when they're disintegrating and they're in stress and distress, their methodical 1s can suddenly become moody and irrational, like 4s can be. And then when they're really healthy and they're moving in a really positive, you know, self-growth kind of direction, when they're integrating, you know, an angry or critical 1 can become more spontaneous and joyful, like a healthy 7. You know, some examples, and I really like using examples of people people that you may know when explaining the profiles, because again, it's just another level of understanding when you know these people. You're like, oh, that makes sense of that person, right? And it also, you start to see consistencies. Like on this list of examples I'm about to give you, there are a ton of politicians and philosophers, because again, they're driven by, like, they, a lot of times ones will take like one to three deep passions of theirs, and they devote their lives to whatever wrong they want to right or whatever system they feel is broken that they want to improve. These are people who devote their lives to one or two common things that, you know, they want to make the world at large better in this specific area, and they're ever focused. So examples of ones are Confucius, Plato, Joan of Arc, Mahatma Gandhi, Pope John Paul II, Nelson Mandela, Margaret Thatcher, Prince Charles, Kate Middleton, Jimmy Carter, Michelle Obama, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton is a great example of a one. Let's see. And then, you know, some celebrities that you may know, that you will know. Martha Stewart is a one. Let's see. Celine Dion, Noam Chomsky, Jerry Seinfeld, Bill Maher, Tina Fey, Katharine Hepburn, Maggie Smith, Emma Thompson, Julie Andrews. Like, these are names you know. And what I really love to do also, guys, is to have a few, like, fictional characters that are examples of the profiles. And here's why I love that. Fictional characters are pretty two-dimensional, right? And I'm not insulting anyone who's created a fictional character. You know, obviously we strive, you know, as authors or whoever, to make every character three-dimensional. But I'm just saying it's easier to wrap your mind around the entirety of a fictional person. It's impossible to wrap your mind around the entirety of a real human being. We're way too complex, right? So oftentimes these fictional characters that we point out can often be like a caricature, like an oversimplified version of this profile type, and that can be really be helpful to gauge a first kind of understanding of this type. So some examples of ones would be Spock, would be Mary Poppins, but Spock is a perfect example of a one in terms of a character, because he's so he can be so kind of straight up emotionless, right, in his strive for the perfect system. And then, so let's talk about why ones are known as the reformers. Ones are reformers because they have a sense of a mission that leads them to want to improve the world in various ways. Like I said, you know, using whatever degree of influence they have and striving for more influence so that they can, you know, even more greatly sort of put that good, right that wrong in the world, right? They strive after higher values, even at the cost of a great personal sacrifice. So their goal is everything to them, right? And, you know, history is full of ones who've really left comfortable lives to do extraordinary things. That's why you see so many politicians, you know, on the list of examples of ones. They're the people who aren't okay with the status quo. They're not, like, gonna say, you know, this thing that's going on with Black Lives Matter, it's so frustrating that people aren't just understanding this. And then instead of just, like, reading an article and being upset on behalf of people who are struggling, they put the article down and they get up and they roll up their sleeves and they get to work, because they see a wrong and they need it to be righted, and they will do anything it takes to do that, which is, again, that is a very wonderful, beautiful quality in a person that can also be the worst quality in that same person, you know, when they're healthy or they're unhealthy. So that's always going to be true of every single profile type, that their greatest strength can also be their greatest challenge, because ones, you know, their challenges are that they're way, way too hard on themselves. They give nothing to them. They give themselves no grace. They hold themselves to such a high standard, it's impossible for any human being on this planet to meet those standards. So when they, you know, when they fail, which they will always, because we're all humans and we fail, they see that as them not even being, like, deserving of anything. Like, their worth is gone because they failed at this moral standard that they set for themselves. So, you know, again, that's not a healthy way to view it, right? They're constantly learning to give themselves grace and to give grace to the people around them. And, you know, kind of coming into the understanding that, you know, they can and should give it their all, but at the end of the day, they can't fix everything. They can't make everyone behave exactly as they feel that they should. And also kind of learning that their way, or it's not their way or the highway. Like, it's their way isn't necessarily the only right way. You know, I believe that I know a one. This person took a test and it told them that they were a six. I think that's insane. This is somebody that I know very, very well who probably would want to remain anonymous, so I'm not saying who they are. But I know in my bones this person is a one. And again, quizzes I just feel like aren't entirely accurate, and I've kind of recently discovered that as I've been preparing for this episode, but I just, yeah, I think I know this one, and I will say about this person that as they have grown into such a strong, like, awesome, incredible, loving person, they've softened, they've had to work really actively on softening their judgment, because ones can be way too judgmental of themselves and people around them because they hold themselves and the people they love to really high standards. And, you know, so this person has really grown as they've grown older in just learning to let people live, you know, and really finding the joy in kind of resting on that a little bit, and kind of putting their, rolling their sleeves back down and sitting back down and being okay with the fact that the work isn't done and that there are still mistakes and that there are still going to be failures and all of that stuff. Really coming to terms with the fact that, you know, I mean, to oversimplify, po-buddies nerfed. So, but really becoming okay with that is a really big deal. So every profile type has a common childhood wound that is often associated to that person, and kind of, it just kind of helps to make that person kind of who they are, right? So as children, ones often felt disconnected from the protective figure in their life. So, you know, mom, dad, whatever legal guardian they had, you know, depending on the nature of the home. Sometimes this means that, like, maybe their parent that was supposed to protect them was actually abusive or was deeply neglectful. You know, maybe the parent was distracted or arbitrary or overly strict or overly lenient, not strict enough. Or, you know, there was an image of this person that a one created in their minds, whether logical or not, somewhere along the way, that meant that they had to be the standard setter because no one else around them was. And they have to really carry that cross, right? Bear that cross. And they feel kind of disconnected from those around them. And they, as an attempt to kind of cope with that feeling, they made themselves their own judges, their own critics. And they developed this code of ethics and a list of rules to adhere by, you know, at a very young age. And this code was strict and must be followed to the letter. And they're kind of relentless of really never being able to accept and always striving for better. And so, you know, again, just way overly critical of themselves and you know, really unforgiving of their own mistakes and failures. And, you know, as a result of this in a one, they can often repress a part of themselves that they don't feel aligns with this, right? So maybe that means they're more relaxed, more creative, more feelings forward, like whatever that looks like. They kind of repress that part of themselves, the artistic part, maybe the creative part, maybe because they're like, we have to focus on, you know, making the world a better place. We have to right this wrong that I've, you know, taken up as my cause in life. And there's no time for that silliness. And as a result, they can kind of resent themselves and resent the people around them because, you know, there's this kind of underlying subconscious feeling that they're not able to fully be themselves. So that is the type one. Ones are amazing. Ones are incredible. I love ones. I'm going to say that about every type, but I really mean it. I know ones in my life that I deeply love, like I said. So number two, the helper. I love twos. My friend that I was talking about earlier, Lizzie, she's a two. And I have to say, she's the first two that I've ever been really very close to in my life. I don't have a lot of twos around me. And I really love having a two in my life now. They think so differently from me. Like, I feel like I have the hardest time relating to twos and, like, sevens, maybe, than any other type on the whole, you know, wheel, because they're so different from me. They're the opposite of me pretty much in every way, but I've really learned that having people like that around you, it's just so great. Like, it's so challenging, but in a really wonderful, fun way. Like, I've just, I can't recommend them enough. You get yourself a two and you hold on tight. So twos are, again, we moved into the feelings center. So they are a feelings forward type. Twos are empathetic, sincere, warm-hearted. They're friendly, generous, self-sacrificing. But they can also be really sentimental and flattering and even sometimes people-pleasing. You know, they're deeply well-meaning and they're driven to relationship. They want to be close with people that they love. They can slip into doing things for others in order to be needed, which, you know, isn't a healthy reason to do something for someone else, right? Just to be needed yourself. And it's not healthy for you or for the relationship, but, you know, they can tend to do that because, you know, they so deeply, you know, their basic fear is being unworthy of love or being unwanted. And their core desire is to feel loved. They want to feel like, you know, if you want to make a two happy in almost any situation, just genuinely, earnestly tell them, like, I don't know what I would do without you in my life. I genuinely don't know. Like, that is music to their ears. I mean, who doesn't want to feel needed or wanted, right? Like, again, everyone's going to feel that to a certain extent. We all are going to relate to these different types. And who doesn't want to feel loved and worthy, right? We all do. But twos, you know, it is their real main central focus. Obviously, their potential wings are ones and threes. And then their key motivation is to be loved, to express their feelings for others, to be needed and appreciated, to get others to respond to them, to vindicate their claims about themselves. When unhealthy, they can disintegrate or, you know, be distressed, and they, you know, it can look like needy twos suddenly becoming aggressive and dominating, kind of like an eight. So that's their disintegrated number is eight. And when they're really healthy and really growing and striving and self-improving and being reflective, you know, a prideful self-deceptive two can become more self-nurturing, emotionally aware, like a healthy four. So four is their integration number and eight is their disintegration number. And then their wings are ones and threes. I hope I'm breaking that down clearly enough. So let's talk about some examples of twos. You're going to see a big shift here from one to two, because again, we were in the instinct center, I think this is what I said, the instinctual center, and when we moved into the feeling center. So big, big shift in the kinds of people you're going to see on this list. So Eleanor Roosevelt, Bishop Desmond Tutu, Nancy Reagan, Monica Lewinsky, let's see, Richard Simmons, John Denver, Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Barry Manilow, musicians and artists, because they feel deeply, right? Dolly Parton, Josh Groban, let's see, Paula Abdul, let's else, Martin Sheen, Danny Glover, yeah, a lot of really cool, Arsenio Hall, some really, really great examples, and then, so let's see, so Dr. McCoy from Star Trek, Melanie Hamilton Willix from Gone with the Wind, that's a great example, it's a great fictional example of a two, Eve Harrington from All About Eve, I actually haven't seen All About Eve, so I can't speak to that, but it is an example I found of a fictional character who is a two. So type twos, they're called the helper, again, because people of this type, they're the most genuinely helpful, generous, wide open people. They, like I think I said earlier, they have mushy, gooey marshmallow hearts. They really do, which is such a beautiful thing. The love and concern that they feel for other people and the genuine desire to do good. They have warm hearts and it makes them feel worthwhile to help other people, right? Twos are most interested in what they feel to be really, really good things in life, like love, closeness, sharing, relationships, family, friends. You know, twos with a healthy balance are loving and helpful and generous, but also can look after themselves in a healthy way, because that is one of the biggest struggles of a two, one of the biggest signs of an unhealthy two, or challenges that a two will face throughout life, is pausing to focus on themselves. It's okay to turn down a friend asking for help if you feel overexerted or like you need to take a night or a day or whatever to yourself and to heal yourself, right? Like we've learned this on every flight we've ever taken. You got to put your own life jacket on before you put on someone else's life jacket. And twos have a really hard time with looking after their own needs because they feel like it gets in the way of them being needed by other people. So self-care is something that you should be pushing twos in your life to do. And if you yourself are a two, you should be pushing yourself to engage in self-care. Turn your phone off for a night and don't be available to people if they need you, just for a 3-hour period. And, you know, watch your favorite movie and do a face mask or like whatever is self-care to you. Go on a hike and be in nature, go camping, whatever is self-care to your soul, do that and make a habit out of doing that. And that is a very, very challenging thing for a two to wrap their heads around, because they feel like they have to be on call at all times, because if they aren't there for someone that they care about when that person needs them, they feel like the relationship is gone. Like they aren't looked at as being needed by the other person anymore or being worthy of love because they didn't give of themselves in that way. That somehow disqualifies them for being loved, which again is not true, right? But it can be something that they kind of can fall into thinking sometimes. So they have to be very careful about, you know, setting aside time for themselves and really catering to themselves as well. That's something that is really important and that can be missed within a two. So let's talk about childhood wound for a two. And that is self-sacrifice. So twos felt as kids oftentimes ambivalent towards the protective figure in their homes. So they felt like there was a lack of nurturance or guidance or structure maybe coming from their protective figure. So to deal with this, twos created an identity that they felt would be complementary to that protective figure. They developed an underlying feeling that the only way they could earn love was through selflessness, goodness, and repression of their own needs. Twos learned not to ask for help and not to, you know, assert their own needs and just to give and give and give and give and give of themselves to other people in a quest for worth and for, you know, the feeling of being loved and being lovable. So their self-love is something that is always on the back burner. Again, like I said, they're always taking care of other people, helping everyone on the plane put on their life jacket and forgetting that they haven't even touched their own. So, you know, that's kind of a textbook too when they're in that mindset. And that's something they have to be really careful of. So, you know, twos become healthier and happier when they learn that they're loved for who they are and not for what they do for other people. So let's talk about threes, shall we? My other good friend, who is also named Elizabeth, actually, well, Lizzie, who I call Lizzie and just talked about, her name's actually Iva, but my other friend Elizabeth, I've known her for years and years and years, over a decade, since we were little tiny little baby kids, and she is such a three. And I have to tell you, as a five, and you know, you'll understand this when we talk about the five, the three's mindset is maybe one of the most foreign to me, and something that I just don't understand. And you know, Elizabeth and I have awesome communication now that we really fought for, right? Like we've been through ups and downs as friends, like lifelong friends always do, right? Like when you're really, really doing life alongside someone, that will come with problems and different things like that, that you fight through and you learn each other better and you learn how to better communicate. And we do that really well now. And I will say she is a very open, healthy, evolving, self-reflective three. Like she very much, and she's also really used the Enneagram as a tool, one of many tools to help with that. But I say that to say, like, when we were younger, I didn't understand anything that woman was saying a lot of the time, because it was just, the idea was so foreign to me. She is such an overachiever. Like she was always like, oh, I got to do this. And then I do this. And then I volunteered for this program. And I said I would work on, you know, this job. And she's an entrepreneur at heart. She's brilliant. And she's always has so many plates spinning at one time. And I never understood that as a five. I was like, dude, like, stop, like, sit down, like, why, like, just watch some TV or something, like, that's so crazy, like, aren't you tired? Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around her need for that. Her desire to achieve and achieve and achieve is, like, something that is very foreign to me in almost a negative way, but I had such a hard time originally understanding that. And again, we've grown so much to understand each other better, and she's balanced out, and I've balanced out, and, it, you know, it makes a lot of sense now. And now I know how to best communicate with her and vice versa, her with me, because we've really taken the time to learn each other. But yeah, it was hard for a while when she would talk about things I just didn't really understand, like why are you even concerned about what people are thinking about? Like, just stop. Like, just go home. Put on some sweatpants, girl. Pour yourself a bottle of wine. I said a bottle instead of a glass, which was probably subconscious and an accurate reflection of how I feel about wine. But anyway, I digress. Let's just talk about threes. You don't care about my friend Elizabeth. You should. That's rude. She's awesome. But you don't. I know that. So threes are known as the achievers. They are success-oriented, pragmatic, they're adaptable, excelling, driven, and very image conscious. Image conscious. I have such a hard time with the word conscious and consciousness. So, you know, threes are very self-assured, attractive, charming, ambitious, competent, and energetic. They are networkers and connectors. They can also be very into status. They're highly driven for advancement. They are very diplomatic and poised. I have another dear, dear lifelong friend who is a three. Don't want to forget to mention her. I won't say her name because I don't know that she'd be down with me saying so, and I don't think she knows she's a three because she doesn't know about the Enneagram, but girl's a three. And they can be overly concerned with their image and what others think of them. You know, they typically have problems with workaholicism and competitiveness. You know, at their best, they are self-accepting and authentic. And, you know, everything that they seem to be, the role models that inspire other people, they are truly authentically that. You know, their basic fear is of being worthless. And their basic need and desire is to feel valuable and worthwhile. And, you know, a lot of times the kind of wire that gets crossed for threes is that the way they earn love is through accomplishing, which is never true. You are loved because you are loved, and also you've accomplished great things and good for you. But it's really, really hard for threes to wrap their heads around that. And, you know, they really lean into this idea that they're earning and their achievement and the next accomplishment and that they're reaching for, like accomplishing that is what makes them lovable to other people. So, you know, it just like a two feels like they have to be needed by others and like emotionally in order to be worthy of love. Threes feel like they have to accomplish to be worthy of love. So, you know, their key motivation is to be affirmed, to distinguish themselves from others, to have attention, to be admired, and to impress the people around them. They deeply want to impress people that they respect. So their bosses, leaders, teachers, they are the epitome of a suck up in school, bringing in the apple and doing the extra work on a project to get all the extra points. They are A+ students. They don't know what it's like to get a B, you guys. And if they were to get a B, it would be so hard on them. Just similarly to a one. So ones and threes have a lot of similarities, but their motives behind their similar actions are very, very different. So, you know, again, threes, they're achieving so that they can be loved a lot of the time. When unhealthy, when moving in disintegration or distress, driven threes suddenly become disengaged and apathetic like nines can be. So that's their disintegration number is nine. But when they're healthy, when they're moving towards integration, growth, self-awareness, a vain, deceitful three can become cooperative and committed to others like a healthy six. Sixes are deeply loyal people for the most part, except for when they're not, like my ex-boyfriend. So examples of a three, this is why examples are valuable. You're gonna see a lot of politicians, a lot of athletes, so many athletes are threes, and Hollywood stars, musicians, like whatever field they're in, this is going to be the best of them. The most well-known names, the household names that everyone knows because they're the best of the best, because threes will never stop excelling, never stop putting in the work and the hours and hours it takes to be the best in their field. So settle in. Examples of threes would be Bill Clinton, Prince William, Condoleezza Rice, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carl Lewis, Muhammad Ali, Mitt Romney, Andy Warhol, Oprah Winfrey, Deepak Chopra. I said Oprah Winfrey really silly, so if I cut that out, that's why I said it kind of laughing, because I said Winfrey before, which is not her name. Deepak Chopra. Let's see. Michael Jordan, OJ Simpson, Tiger Woods, Lance Armstrong. So again, like, if nobody knew about golf, they would still know Tiger Woods. If nobody knew about the whole cycling world, they would know Lance Armstrong. Like, you know Elvis Presley. You know Paul McCartney. I'm sorry, Paul McCartney, Madonna, Sting, Whitney Houston, Jon Bon Jovi, Lady Gaga. Okay, Taylor Swift is the ultimate example of a three. And if you really want to understand the mindset at the heart of a three, watch her documentary. I think it's called Miss Americana on Netflix, because she just, I mean, she does such a good job. And I don't know if she knows about the Enneagram. She doesn't mention it. So I think this is just her being very vulnerable and self-reflective about her needs that she's realized that drive her, whether it be unhealthy or healthy, you know, good or bad. And she's very vulnerable in that. And it is just a very open look at what a three strives for and what their mindset and feelings are. She is like a poster child for three. So, and again, she's the best of the best in her field. She is one of the best lyricists of our time, period. Like, you cannot like her music, and that's fine, like, disagree, because I stan, but, like, you know, you can think that, you know, her music isn't your type, but you can't deny that she is one of the strongest lyricists of our generation, and probably, I would say, if I had to pick, like, top five lyricists of our generation, it would be her, and then rap artists. It would be all rappers, and then Taylor Swift, because rappers are the best of the best when it comes to lyrics. Like, hands down, there's no question. Taylor Swift is up there. She strives for the best. Okay, I'm done loving on Taylor Swift now. Her new album is so good. Anyway, so, and then in terms of fictional characters that are threes, the best one ever is Rachel Berry from Glee. Girl never stops striving for the next achievement, the next goal. She wants to be the star, the household name, the best of the best when it comes to Broadway and Hollywood. She wants to conquer every world. And, like, that is the perfect caricature of a three, Rachel Berry from Glee. So, you know, threes are named the achiever, obviously, because, you know, they really can do and achieve really great things in the world. They are the stars of human nature. Like, people often look up to them because their graciousness, their personal accomplishments, they are that good, because they won't rest until they are. So they are the best of the best in their field. And so they're often really looked up to, which feeds their need to, you know, to be seen in that light, right? They enjoy motivating others to be their best as well, which is awesome. And they're one, I would say, potential negative or challenging thing that a three faces is, because they so badly just want to fit in everywhere they go, they want everyone to see them in the same light, they become really, really good at tailoring themselves and their personality to whatever group of people they're talking to. So, you know, when you see a politician, you know, go to, like, this group of people, and then this group of people, and then, you know, the, like, go talk to farmers, and then they go talk to, you know, people in marginalized communities over here, and they go talk to, like, whatever. They put on a different face for every audience, right? And they speak specifically tailored to that specific audience, and they do it so well that sometimes they can lose track of their true selves. And again, not every three feels this. You know, Elizabeth, my friend I was telling you about, like, she doesn't do that. Like, she's not a mask wearer. She's never been. She's super authentic. But, you know, she very strongly exemplifies other characteristics of threes, and also other, like, her she has challenges. Like I said, like, she has connected her worth to her accomplishments in a way that threes can. But this specific challenge of, like, being a mask wearer, she doesn't. That's not her at all. And again, I've known her since we were kids, we were teenagers, and it really never has been her. So, you know, you're never going to 100% associate with all of these qualities, but, you know, if you're feeling like you relate to this one, you know, a lot of people do. So the childhood wound for a three is often rejection of core self. So a lot of times as children, threes felt deeply connected to their nurturing figure, whoever that person was in their life, or people, and they learned to sort of intuit the nurturing parent's needs before they were expressly stated. So they really got good at anticipating the needs of people they looked up to, and they strived to meet those needs without having been asked. They sensed that they were loved for what they achieved rather than who they were. When they received a look of approval, they basked in it, and they worked hard to gain that look again. So, you know, unlike twos who try to gain approval by being needed, threes gain approval by achieving their goals, being successful, and they gather tokens of achievement in hopes of being loved. loved. So they're trophy collectors, you know? So threes develop the habit of working really hard, but it's kind of like working on their ego self rather than like their true self. They struggle with the underlying feeling that their true self would be undeserving or not worthy of love. If they really let their guard down and just were themselves, they feel like they wouldn't be loved. So they hide behind their accomplishments. So here's what I think I'm gonna do, guys. This is taking a lot longer than I thought it would, but it's because I'm super, super passionate about this topic. And I just really, like, I really, really want to get into every single type because I want you to be able to see yourself, to figure out what you know, number you likely are, and be able to use that to kind of self-discover and self-improve and you know, become more healthy in your communication with other people as well. So I'm really, really passionate about the Enneagram, and I thought I would be able to make it into one concise episode, but I am seeing that that is absolutely not the case, because I am only through 3 of the 9, and this is already 1 hour and 23 minutes. And I know I haven't edited, but like, it's a lot. Okay. It's long. And I don't want to get too far over like an hour. I want to keep every episode to about an hour. So I think what I need to do is become a little flexible in my schedule and I'm going to move this, I'm going to break this into 2 parts. So, come back next week for the rest of the numbers. I'm going to go through the rest of them next week. We will, go over, I know I only went through 3, but I also went through like the origin and I just defined all of the terms and everything like that. So now that we've gone through all of that, I think 4 through 9 will be really simple for me to cover next week. And I definitely think that's the best way to go. I'm going to wrap this up for you guys. I'm going to be flexible. This was not my plan. I wrote next week's topic on my calendar in pen, and that is making me very upset right now. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap up and just say, please tune in next week where we will finish going over. If you haven't yet heard a type that sounds like you, you know, there are however many more, 6 more, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, there are 6 more personality types to get into for you guys. And I can't wait. I honestly can't wait. We haven't talked about me yet. And so many of the wonderful numbers that I just genuinely love and love talking about. So this is going to be great. This is definitely the way to go. Tune in next week for part 2 of the Enneagram. In the meantime, guys, I hope you have a really great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, please stay home. If you don't absolutely have to be somewhere, please stay home. I get it, your summer is boring and that's sad for you. But like, literally, like, people are dying, okay? Stay home, be anti-racist, do something about it, because Black lives do matter. Have a wonderful week, and thank you so much for listening to Faith Finds Out. This is Faith Signs Out.